It's Friday, July 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump is about to accept the Republican Party nomination for president amid some fresh controversy. U.S. officials say Islamic State is weakening in both Syria and Iraq.
They use legal procedure to deal with a political issue or a political event, and it doesn't work.
One of three convicted pro-democracy student leaders in Hong Kong speaks with us, and Miranda Lambert goes public on her former husband. It's all on today's International Edition. Division instead of unity was a dominant narrative at the Republican National Convention Thursday, as Texas Senator Ted Cruz's criticisms of presidential nominee Donald Trump spilled over into today, which is the final day of the four-day event. Speaking to his home state delegation Thursday at the convention in Cleveland, Ohio, Cruz said he will not cast his presidential vote for Democrat Hillary Clinton, but declined to say if he'll vote for Trump.
Stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
Well, just after that, those representing the state of New York chanted over Cruz as he spoke, demanding that he announce his backing of their nominee. Cruz was one of the last competitors in the contentious race for the nomination, and later Donald Trump mentioned that he had seen the text of the speech a couple hours before, but allowed Senator Cruz to deliver it anyway. Meanwhile, there is some fresh controversy surrounding Mr. Trump himself, as he openly questioned whether the United States would automatically defend other NATO allies if they were attacked. That's a bedrock principle of the U.S.-European military alliance since the end of World War II. As he prepares to address Americans as the 2016 Republican presidential candidate, Mr. Trump told the New York Times that, if elected, he would set conditions on how the United States would respond to an attack on any of the other 27 NATO countries. Trump said he would first look to see if other countries had shared the cost of funding NATO, defense expenses the United States has largely borne, but he says can no longer afford. Well, VOA's Doug Bernard joins us from the convention hall in Cleveland, Ohio. Doug, hashtag OMG, there's no shortage of astounding news from this convention. Let us begin with Mr. Ted Cruz.
Well, there we go. And Jim, if nothing else, say what you will, Donald Trump has made covering conventions interesting once again. So last night, interestingly, now, Donald Trump and Senator Ted Cruz were, of course, bitter rivals, especially toward the end of the primary. I mean, it really got nasty between the two of them, and clearly there's bitter feelings. Now, about a month ago, Senator Cruz met with Donald Trump in Washington, and it's reported that the senator said he was not going to endorse him then. And Mr. Trump said that was okay. And then about a week ago or so, as they were preparing for the final stages of the convention, they met once again. And again, Senator Cruz said he was not going to endorse Mr. Trump. And Mr. Trump responded by saying, well, not only will you have a speaking spot on Wednesday, which is the, you know, sort of penultimate day, but I'm going to give you 20 minutes longer than anyone else. So the address that Senator Cruz began, it was a very solid address, very much appealing, you could tell, to, you know, that sort of rock rib Republican, as you might call it, those themes of liberty and equality and limited government and that sort of thing. And it was right toward the end that you just heard in that clip that you played, where Senator Cruz said the words, vote your conscience. Now, that's not just a dog whistle. That is a megaphone that was used by the Never Trump people to say that, you know, don't vote, in effect, don't vote for Donald Trump. And that raucous sound that you heard, maybe people didn't understand, that wasn't people cheering for Ted Cruz. That was people saying boo. And Senator Cruz was not only booed off the stage, and you could tell he kind of, like, you know, had to scurry off the stage. But interestingly, one, Donald Trump, toward the end of Senator Cruz's address, stepped into the convention floor, went into the family box, and, of course, all the cameras swung over to him as if to say, I'm the guy that matters, you're yesterday's news. So I think that was, you know, it was basically, this did not in any way put an end to this rivalry and this bad blood between Senator Cruz's faction and Donald Trump's faction, which the whole point of the convention is to find some sort of unity.
Well, speaking of today's news, we will hear from Mr. Trump.
Yes, we're going to definitely hear from Mr. Trump. This is, you know, as you know, American conventions, the modern day, they're 4 days in length. They could really be done in 2 days, but they build. You know, the first day may start with appeals to the base. The second day is, you know, kind of, you know, more family-friendly. You know, it's all very kind of scripted and planned out. It hasn't necessarily gone this way throughout the entire convention, but, of course, tonight is the ultimate moment. It's the acceptance speech by Donald Trump. All eyes on him, and now we expect in, oh, gosh, maybe a few hours to begin to see the campaign releasing some sort of initial excerpts of what Mr. Trump plans to say. But the one thing that we've learned is that you can look at a speech that Mr. Trump is going to deliver, but you just never know if he's going to go off. You know, it's a very different setting, a convention hall, than those big rallies that he has, like at the airplane hangars and, you know, the football stadiums and that sort of thing. So it's going to be really fascinating, I think, to watch which Donald Trump appears for the address tonight.
Well, and this arguably is the most important speech he will be delivering in this campaign season, at least so far.
Oh, definitely. I think so. I mean, this is really his chance to speak unfiltered for 20, 30 minutes to the American public to reach out and make the case, not just hit on the kind of Republican talking points that we've heard this week about Hillary Clinton's bad or, you know, those kinds of things, but to make the case to connect with people, to say to them, you know, those of you who are feeling economically unstable, who are feeling, you know, insecure in your housing, in your jobs, just in general conditions of your life, I hear you. I'm going to be the guy to bring change to Washington that will, you know, make your lives better. That's, I think, you know, I'm not in the business of giving politicians advice, but I think that's really what people are looking for Mr. Trump to deliver tonight. Not a big speech, no yelling, but one that really connects with people.
Well, while Mr. Trump tries to connect with voters, we're glad that we connected with you. VOA's Doug Bernard from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you so much.
Well, so much is buzzing online about the final day of the Republican National Convention. And so to look at all that, we join with our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, here in the studio with the latest on the web. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Yes, a lot of commotion online, offline. Hashtag Trump yourself is trending at this hour, mostly on Facebook. It's by none other than his arch rival, Hillary Clinton. The presumptive Democratic presidential candidate launched the website Thursday, and the address is hillaryclinton.com/Trump yourself. It's where Facebook users can upload a photo and have a quote from Republican nominee superimposed onto it. So think of it as a website that gathers memes of Trump's quotes on certain types of people. So when you go to the website, it asks you, what has Donald Trump said about people like you?
How much attention is this getting?
I'll say a good amount. Keep in mind, it hasn't been launched for a full day yet, but there are already images up on the website. And to show you a little bit of the highlights, a popular quote seems to be this. Women are always griping, and there is another word that's similar to complaining that starts with B. Mm. Another one is a picture of a gay man telling people, Donald Trump doesn't think I should be able to get married with rainbow colors superimposed.
Wow. Well, let's move on to the GOP response on the convention so far. What do you have?
Yeah, so we have to talk about Ted Cruz. Cruz not endorsing Trump did not sit well with Mr. Trump, and he definitely expressed that thought on Twitter. He tweeted, Ted Cruz talks about the Constitution, but doesn't say that if the Dems win the presidency, the new justices appointed will destroy us all. On a different note, his children have been very involved in the last few days, as you know, and one of his best-known children, Ivanka Trump, had a one-on-one interview with both CNN and Fox News. But unfortunately for Trump, many replies to the interview clips are about his remarks on Ivanka's body. One of the most liked comments is from last year, as quoted by Rolling Stone magazine. It reads like this. Yeah, she's really something, and what a beauty, that one. if I weren't happily married, and you know, her father, ellipses. Nearly 700 people liked that comment. Jim, back to you.
Wow. Well, who says politics isn't interesting? Thanks for the wrap-up, G. You may tweet us your comments and questions to our Twitter stream at VOA_IE. And you'll find myself and G on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, Taliban insurgents overrun northern Afghan district. South Korean opponents argue THAAD may do more harm than good. Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi accepts Obama's invitation, that is, to visit the United States. U.S. naval warship to make first visit to New Zealand since the 1980s. China's communists fear new capitalists may fund wrong causes. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website, also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Two separate meetings on the fight against Islamic State have been held. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter and Secretary of State John Kerry hosted dozens of officials from more than 30 countries on the military strategy to defeat the Islamic State group and post-IS assistance for newly liberated populations. They all met near Washington Wednesday and Thursday, and Mr. Carter called the plans and commitments that will help to deliver the IS group its lasting defeat. He said the campaign has three objectives.
First, to destroy the ISIL parent tumor in Iraq and Syria. As recent attacks remind us, ISIL's safe havens threaten not only the lives of Iraqi and Syrian peoples, but also the security of our own citizens. And the sooner we defeat ISIL in Iraq and Syria, the safer our countries will be. So our second objective is to combat ISIL's metastases everywhere they emerge around the world. And third, and most important, to help to protect our homelands.
Carter said the Islamic State group is being rolled back to its last positions of Raqqa in Syria and Mosul in Iraq. Terrorism analyst Max Abrams of Northeastern University in Boston tells VOA's Victor Beatty that it's a remarkable turn of events 2 years after the Islamic State was considered a formidable threat.
You know, for the past couple of years, we've heard all sorts of outrageously pessimistic assessments about the rise of Islamic State and how this group was so strategic and smart and brutally effective with its mastery of the internet and social media and recruitment skills. It turns out that Islamic State was not faring very well. Islamic State is manifesting its weakness in all sorts of ways, from lost battles to lost land to lost revenues to smaller salaries to diminished propaganda output to an increase in defections. And so it makes sense for defense ministers to start talking about the day after. The big battle that everybody is waiting for is against Mosul. And Mosul will probably be the most difficult battle of them all against Islamic State because there are the most citizens under Islamic State's rule. We don't actually know how many, but it could be that in going into Mosul, 1 million Iraqis will be displaced.
This is going to be a big task for Iraq and its allies. Do we have any sense of how these people, the civilian population under IS control in Mosul, are faring?
I think that it's fair to infer that they are not happy. And the reason why is because a lot of Islamic State's efforts these days are to suppress the population, to cut it off from the internet, to prevent people from leaving town, to scare people into submission in order to adhere to the strictest interpretation of Sharia law.
Didn't the residents of Mosul initially welcome Islamic State because the Iraqi government seemed to be unable to or mismanaged governance in Mosul?
Right. That is certainly the conventional wisdom. How we're going to stabilize Iraq without a dictator remains an open question, and I honestly don't know if anyone has the answer.
Terrorism analyst Max Abrams. Three Hong Kong student leaders, Joshua Wong, Alex Chow, and Nathan Law, have been convicted for participating in a protest that led to a massive pro-democracy demonstration that happened nearly 2 years ago. Nathan Law tells International Edition that he believes that this legal action fails to address larger issues.
The conditions of freedom and human rights in Hong Kong have been decaying and declining, and definitely it triggered a lot more other more radical actions coming out in Hong Kong, and it is not a very healthy situation. And also the government tends to solve these kind of political problems by legal procedures. For example, this is an example of it, which they use legal procedure to deal with a political issue or a political event. And it doesn't work. It doesn't solve any intrinsic contradictions of the whole society and the bipolarization and intense situation between the people in civic society and the government haven't been solved. So I believe that the Hong Kong government, they should really consider to adjust their tactics. Instead of just suing all the people that they don't like, they should build bridges between them and try to find a way out and to ensure that everyone in Hong Kong, they enjoy their freedom and human rights.
Nathan Law, one of the three Hong Kong student leaders convicted for taking part in the pro-democracy protests 2 years ago. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. It's been a whole year since country music power couples Blake Shelton and Miranda Lambert's divorce, and during that time, Blake Shelton's been quite vocal. Miranda Lambert, on the other hand, has remained relatively quiet. That is, until now. Her new song, Vice, was just released. Nikki Strong of VOA Music and International Edition's Sarah Williams tells us more.
So, Nikki, now that Miranda has spoken through her music, what's she saying?
Great question, especially since she did drop her song the week of the anniversary of her divorce. So that's symbolic right there. Everyone has been waiting to hear her side of the story. So we were expecting some response that would talk directly about Blake or to Blake. But she doesn't really go there. She doesn't go and get Blake. She actually goes inside herself.
Oh.
Yes. So the song is self-reflective. It paints, it's like a paintbrush that draws a picture of a woman's regretful decisions and self-destructive behaviors. Vices, basically. A series of vices, per se, that someone would engage in after a heartbreak, you know, or after a divorce. So some of the lyrics say, another vice, another call, another bed I shouldn't crawl out of. At 7 a.m. with shoes in my hand, said I wouldn't do it, but I did it again. And I know I'll be back tomorrow night. So it's a little heavy. It's great, though. But she doesn't make any direct ties to Blake Shelton, per se. If anything, she creates a picture of someone dealing with depression and heartache.
Well, that interpretation would align with her post on Instagram, too.
Yeah, she dropped the song first and then posted a message on Instagram, the actual one-year anniversary date. And this is what it says. It says, "The last year of my life has been one of heartache and healing, of learning to be honest, accepting the flaws and celebrating the smiles, finding peace in dark places, having some moments alone with me, facing fears and feelings, all of them. I got to know my guitars, became friends with a pencil and paper, used melodies to lead me places I had never been, made music with my friends, because music is medicine. Thank you for joining me on this journey."
So how are the fans responding to all of this?
Well, the majority of us are very supportive. We're like, yes, Miranda. We're excited about new music, and we're excited that she's putting stuff out there. Of course, some, you know, like the tabloids, they want the pettiness that comes with going tit for tat, especially since the first, you know, couple of singles that Blake Shelton's album has dropped has been directed towards Miranda and don't necessarily put her in the best light. But what I find to be interesting is with both of them is that Blake Shelton's first single, Came Here to Forget, and hers are very similar because they both speak about people trying to cope with heartache through vices. So in Blake's first single, he talks about going to a bar to drown out his sorrows and perhaps sleeping with the person that, you know, he's talking to forget his heartache. And drinking and sleeping around are two of the things that she talks about doing in Vice. So, and Blake's album cover is called If I'm Honest. And I think she is being honest as well. I think first and foremost with herself. And the fact that she decided to release a song that is literally not about Blake, I think speaks to her moving on and growing from her experience and using music to move through it. So I can't wait to hear the new album. No word yet as to a release date. We just have Vice.
Okay, we just have to wait for that. You can hear Miranda Lambert's Vice and more music from country artists like Blake Shelton on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on social media at VOA Music on Facebook and VOA_music on Twitter. Thanks a lot, Nikki.
My pleasure.
Another vibe. All dressed up in a pretty black label. Sweet sound.
You've been listening to International Edition, but don't go too far. We have special live coverage of Donald Trump's speech at the Republican National Convention that comes up at 1 hour Universal Time on The Voice of America. Also, the Democratic Convention all next week right here on International Edition at voanews.com, also Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for joining us. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zena Bobdell Rockman. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Prominent independent social researcher and political commentator Khaim Lai was shot and killed in Phnom Penh on Sunday, July 10th. "Let me share my condolences for the dead. I condemn this brutal act," Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a Facebook post later that day. He also called on authorities to take strong action in the case and try to control and strengthen security in order to protect the safety of people across the country. In a Facebook post, Sam Rangsi, the president of the opposition Cambodian National Rescue Party, strongly condemned the killing. "Mr. Khaim Lai was a dignified son of Cambodia who actively participated in the fight for democracy and justice for the Khmer people," he wrote. "I never thought that I was going to live long," Mr. Lai reportedly said. "One day I might die or be shot to death, but as long as I live, I will say what others dare not to. No one can buy me or make me not speak out." We are deeply saddened and concerned by reports of the tragic killing of prominent Cambodian political commentator Dr. Khaim Lai, said John Kirby, assistant secretary and State Department spokesperson, in a statement. "We offer our sincere and profound condolences to his family, friends, and colleagues. The United States," he said, "is following developments in this case closely, noting the Cambodian government's call for an investigation, and urged that authorities ensure this process be thorough and impartial."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. for a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.